action. If he sees murder and rape and turns a blind eye to bringing that man to justice, then he's corrupt. If he's a good judge, he must do all he can to see that justice is done. In one 10-year period between 1990 and the year 2000, there was something like 200,000 murders in the U.S. 40 or so percent are brought to justice, maybe 50%. That means 80 or so or 90,000 murderers got away scot-free in that one 10-year period. If the eye of the Lord is in every place beholding the evil and the good, and God's going to turn a blind eye to murderers, then God is corrupt, he's not good, and he should be brought to justice himself. The exact opposite is true. God is so good, he is going to see that murderers are punished. He's going to see that justice is done. But he's so good, he's going to see that rapists and liars and thieves and fornicators and adulterers and blasphemers and every idle word the men speak, they will give an account thereof on the day of judgment. So once you realize that God is perfect, holy, just, and good, you end up saying, how could a good God not create hell? How could there not be justice for something like a murderer and a rapist? And it's the law that makes the difference. That law brings the knowledge of sin. So what you and I should be doing is what Nathan did. We're to preach the word, be instant, in season, out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all patience and doctrine. And whatever we do should spring from a fountain of love. We're motivated by love, not an arrogant, you're going to hell attitude, but a reasoning with a sinner, as Paul did with Felix, reasoning with sinner about righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come. And Felix trembled. Why? Because the law makes judgment reasonable. Hell makes sense. And you get people saying, yeah, but you shouldn't come to Christ out of a fear of hell. That's not a good motive. I think people that say that have got too good a judge of the character of humanity. They're saying, oh, man should have a pure motive. When it's not in man to have a pure motive. We've got sinful, unregenerate hearts. God says, flee from the wrath that's to come. So do what he says. We need to flee from the wrath that's to come. Fear of hell is a legitimate reason to come to Christ. Even Jesus, who has saved us from the wrath to come. Martin Luther said the first duty of the gospel preacher is to declare God's law and show the nature of sin. But do we see modern preachers doing that? Warning every man that we may present every man perfect in Christ Jesus. It's our first duty according to Luther. I'm sorry to put this image in your mind, but I was standing in front of a mirror with a shirt off some time ago, admiring my physique. And I said out loud, as I looked in the mirror, admiringly at God's creation, I said, could be worse. And I hear my wife say, not much. However, I have a self-esteem mirror. It has what's called a light dimmer. When I look in the mirror and I don't like what I see, I just dim the light a little and it looks much better. Listen to what Spurgeon said about light dimmers. He said, lower the law and you dim the light by which man perceives his guilt. This is a very serious loss to the sinner rather than a gain, for it lessens the likelihood of his conviction and conversion. I so love Spurgeon's perception. He said, you lower the law and you dim the light by which man perceives his guilt. He said, this is a very serious loss to the sinner rather than a gain, for it lessens the likelihood of his conviction and conversion. See, what modern evangelism has done is thrown out the law. They said sinners understand that they have sinned. They understand, not according to the Bible. The Bible in Romans 3 says there is none that understand. None. And great disservice has been done to the church and to the world by people saying sinners already understand, they just need to hear the gospel. No, the Bible says there is none that understand. They need the schoolmaster to bring them to Christ. They need the knowledge of sin. The good soil is hearer is he who hears and understands. If a man doesn't understand that he sinned against God, if he doesn't perceive sin in its true light, he's not going to exercise biblical repentance. And thus, he will join himself to the people of God and be unconverted and sit amongst God's people as a tear among the wheat, foolish virgins among the wise, bad fish among the good. goats among the sheep until the day of judgment, when the false is separated from the true. Lower the law and you dim the light by which man perceives his guilt. This is a very serious loss for the sinner, rather than a gain, for it lessens the likelihood of his conviction and conversion. And Spurgeon said, "I say you've deprived the gospel of its ablest auxiliary." That's its most powerful weapon, when you've set aside the law. "You've taken away from it the schoolmaster that is to bring men to Christ. They'll never accept grace until they trample before a just and holy law. Therefore, the law serves the most necessary purpose and must not be removed from its place." I was in a church in West Virginia some time ago, and I was standing in the lobby waiting to speak in a Sunday morning service, and they had a television in the lobby, and I watched the pastor of the church, try and exhort his flock to become involved in a protest he had that afternoon against abortion. He said, "I wonder if any of you folks would stand with me on the side of a road and just today hold up signs saying abortion is wrong." He said, "I really want your support with this. We've got to make a stand against this Holocaust in our nation." And I think 16 people from a church of about 500 lifted their hands and said, "Pastor, we'll stand with you." And I could tell by his body language that he was very disappointed. He went and sat down, introduced me, sat down. I got up and I said, "Folks, let me just share with you why I feel strongly about the issue of abortion." So a number of years ago, when I was an assistant pastor, someone came up to me and said, "Ray, you know that new convert? Her name's Fran. Do you know that she's getting an abortion?" I said, "You're kidding. When is this?" They said, "Today." I said, "Today? What time?" They said, 2 o'clock. It was about 11, 12 o'clock. So I grabbed our church van and drove like a maniac. I broke the law. Just all drove into the city to the hospital. All the way, I was saying, "God, give me courage. Give me the words. Give me the wisdom. I've got to say the right thing. Please help me to stop this woman doing this." Ran up to the second floor of the building. Ran into her room. She'd already had a pre-operation medication. She was sitting on the bed. My words failed me. I just said, "Please don't do this." She looked at me and smiled. She says, "Okay, I'm not going to have an abortion." She said, "I just prayed, God, if you don't want me to have an abortion, make Ray Comfort come up and see me." I didn't need to say anything. I just said, and I left. 18 months later, I was at a church picnic and I saw this woman. And beside her was this little child. It was about 2 years later. Little girl with long hair and sweet little dress. And I knelt down beside that child and I did what we often do to little kids. I went, "Why do we do things like that to kids? I mean, welcome to the world, kid." But as I looked in the eyes of that child, I thought, this is what this issue is about. And I shared that with his folks, and that afternoon I think over 400 of his flock came out with that pastor. And there is a point where the church must stand up and be salt within society, must stand against the rot, must stand for righteousness. However, we must also be light and preach the gospel, because that is the answer. The answer really isn't to protest abortion. The answer is to change the abortionist's heart through the power of the message of the gospel. That's the answer. And that's the agenda of the church of the book of Acts. What a rotten thing is going on in Rome, but you don't see Paul and Silas getting involved in politics and trying to change the world through political endeavor. Now, I love it when there's a Christian in high places within the political system, and they stand for righteousness. That's great. Pray for our politicians, but realize the agenda of the church is to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And sadly, we're not seeing that. Many of you know that Bill Bright, in his book, The Coming Revival, one of my cheeks is longer than the other after. Oh, it's okay, I'll fix it. Of the church in America regularly share their faith with others. 2%! I mean, what would you think of a man who polished his car while a 4-year-old kid drowned in a swimming pool? If he could let a kid drown while he polished his car, he's guilty of what civil law calls depraved indifference. Perfect choice of words. Depraved means it's as low as you can get, and indifference means he couldn't care less. Let the kid die, I don't care. It seems that 98% of our church in the contemporary America are guilty of the crime of depraved indifference. world go to hell, I couldn't care. Waxing bold in worship while sinners sink into hell. Love could never polish a car while a child drowns. And love cannot sit on a pew while sinners sink into hell. My Bible says, he that loves not knows not God, for God is love. Spurgeon said, if you no wish for others to be saved, then you're not saved yourself. Be sure of that. If you're not concerned for your neighbor's salvation, I'm concerned for yours. We don't evangelize to get saved. We evangelize because we're saved. Because the love of God dwells within us. We're motivated by gratitude to God for the cross and concern for the unsaved. Jesus warned, whoever shall be ashamed of me and my words, of him shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he shall come in his own glory and in his Father's and the holy angels. Ask the average Christian, are you ashamed of Jesus? They'll say, no. I got a fish on my car. There's more fish on cars in Southern California than there are on the Pacific Ocean. But listen to what Jesus actually said. Whosoever shall be ashamed of me and my words, of him shall I be ashamed. Oh, we're not ashamed of Jesus. I mean, even the world says Jesus was a great teacher. No, it's his words that we can be ashamed of. If your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. Cast it from you. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. That's what brings the reproach of Christ. Talking about hell, talking about righteousness, talking about every idle word. Saying, Jesus said, if you look upon a woman and lust for her, you commit adultery with her in your heart. Jesus said, the world hates me because I testify of its deeds that are evil, and they'll hate you because they hated him. Study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that needs not be ashamed. Rightly dividing the word of truth. If you're ashamed, if you don't know what to say, it's because you haven't studied to show yourself approved. He said, that's all right, you've got the gift of evangelism. There's no such thing as the gift of evangelism. That's like saying to someone, you have the gift of feeding starving children. That's a great gift. Go for it. It's not a gift, it's love and action. That's all evangelism is. If I can speak to sinners, it's because I have studied it, I've practiced it. Everything you've conquered in life, you did it because you studied it. You studied how to crawl, you studied how to walk, you studied how to use a knife and a spoon, you studied how to ride a bike. Remember the first time you drove a car? Terrified. I mean, there are so many things you've got to remember driving a car. Now? Yeah. As you do it more, you become more confident. Same with evangelism. You'll still have to battle your fears, but you won't be intimidated. Once you learn the principles of biblical evangelism, that is, you do not spend much time in the intellect. You do what Jesus did and address the conscience. You do what Nathan did and address the conscience. You do what Paul did and address the conscience. How do you do that? You use the law to bring the knowledge of sin, because the work of the law is written in the heart. The conscience bears witness. Romans 2 verse 15. I'll show you what I mean in a moment. The intellect is the place of argument. Romans 8 verse 7. The carnal mind is enmity against God. It is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. What does that mean? Well, the unregenerate person is in a place of hostility towards God. Don't believe it? Listen to how they use his name as a cuss word. Hitler's name wasn't despised enough to use as a cuss word. You get people running around saying, oh, Hitler, oh, Mahatma Gandhi. Just doesn't happen. But they use the name of Jesus Christ and the name of God as a filth word to express disgust, because the carnal mind is in a state of hostility towards God. For it is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. Where is that hostility directed? At the moral law. It is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. That's where the hostility is. Oh, they've got their own concept of God, but when you speak of God being a God of justice and righteousness who has a law, that's when the enmity comes up. God's not telling me what to do with my life. So if you want to address someone with the gospel, you've got to find a place of harmony between that carnal mind. And where can you find that? Romans 2 and the law of God. Where can you find that? Romans 2 verse 14. Which show the work of the law written in the heart, the conscience bearing witness. Okay, let me see if I can explain. I find the hardest thing about witnessing is the transition. I can talk to someone about the weather, about car racing, about yachts, about tennis. I can relate to them. But how do you swing to the things of God and do it smoothly? You know, hello, ma'am. Hello. Nice day. We're getting some good weather lately. Mm-hmm. Guess who made the weather? God. I mean, how do you do it smoothly? I do it with gospel tracts. I always carry gospel tracts on me. I was so excited to hear the Taco Bell thing. You know, that wonderful testimony. Screwed it up. Read it, screwed it up. And 3 years later, back it comes. There was a file. It got recalled. He thought he had deleted that file. No, up it comes. On the screen. So encouraging. I always carry tracts on me. You'll never find me in public without gospel tracts. I will give $1,000 to anyone who ever finds me in public without gospel tracts. Someone saw me in a swimming pool once and went, aha! I said, aha! Think you'll find me? I've got John 3:16 and the sinner's prayer tattooed on my chest, just in case. Now, you'll never find, I've always got gospel tracts on me. Look, see? Tracks everywhere. I've got tracks. If I'd been God and created man, I would have created him like a kangaroo with a nice pouch on the front. Tracks. Here. Is like one of those? Tracks are great. I mean, if you can't get to talk to someone, we use the $1 million bills. This is, that brother cut us a little short, but this is, the Obama one is the $1 trillion one. That's what I use. That's got, I don't know how, 12 zeros after the one. People love this. It's got a little thing up here that says abortion stops a human heart in tiny print, because people that like Obama don't care about the life of the unborn. So it's great to have that little thing there. Gospel message on the back. And it's great. You just say to someone, did you get your trillion? I'm trying to get the economy right. And they laugh. So I've given out two. I've got another 11 to go. 11 trillion and we're there. I'll say, here's a trillion. Did you get yours? No. Spend it wisely. There you are. And people laugh. They'll come back and say, can I have one for my brother-in-law, my sister, my uncle, my cousins? It's a wonderful way to get the gospel across. People don't look at you weirdly and say, what do you want? Something bigger? This is great. You can do this at a drive-thru. Say, can you cash a big bill? Remember that stupid picture I showed you, my stretched head? It's what's happening in the spiritual. That big head at the beginning, this one here. That silly picture. I've got that in my wallet. See? That's my ID. So this is how when I travel by plane, this is what I do. I walk in with a straight face, into the plane and go. Now, there's a lot of tension on planes for obvious reasons nowadays, so flight attendants often go like this. Bertha, look at this, Bertha. Oh, this is, I needed this. Oh, this is great. Thank you. This is great. Look, Fred. Oh. And then I say, hey, doing a good job. Here's a trillion for you. One for the other flight attendant. How many drivers do we have? Two. Okay, there you are. Make sure we get in safely. Now, I'm speaking loud enough for the men in business class to hear what's going on. Because the men in business class are minding their own business until someone's giving out money on the front of the plane. So then I turn around and realize why God made me this height. This is the height of the eye level of businessmen in business class. So then I go like this. How you doing? Did you get your trillion? No? Well, there you are. And I'm saying it loud enough for the guy behind him. He says, what's going on? Did you get your trillion? No, no. Spend it wisely. Fix the economy. Do it down the plane. And people are just one after the other. What's this? What's this? I mean, we're like, they're like sheep, people. Really? How many of you give out tracts? You've got a whole lot of people there. First person says, nope. Second person, nope. Meh. Meh. If you give the first person say, yep. Meh. Meh. They'll take it. And so you get the first person down and shh, did this on a plane. Flight attendant comes stomping in the aisle and says, excuse me, sir, have you got a $1 million bill for a guy down the front? I said, sure. So instead of giving her one, I gave her a bundle. She turns around and says, anyone else want $1 million? She's giving out tracts. Okay, I've got a scenario for you. You're in Kmart, in line. You're three people away from the register. And you think, yeah, I'll be out of here soon. Yes. And suddenly you hear, price check. So you realize you're going to be stuck in the line for 10 minutes while they run off and find that little, they can't find it, so you're stuck there. So you think to yourself, oh, I'm stuck here for 10 minutes. That little guy, Ray Comfort, said, carry gospel tracts. I'll give one to the guy behind me. How many of you can identify with that? Before you put your hand up, I can give out a gospel tract to the lady on the checkout stand. Okay, I'm leaving. I'm checking out. I say, check this out, check it, later I'll check out. I'm up, gone. But to be standing in line with a guy behind me, and once he says,
what is this?
Is this nothing, sir? Please don't read it. Or what say he reads it out loud? I've had people read them out loud in public. They're going, the $1 million question, will you go to heaven when you die? I'm going, shh. So how many of you can identify with me? That is a scenario that's kind of scary. Come on, lift your hand up. Okay, almost everyone that's within hearing. How many of you would like to try skydiving? Lift up your hand if you'd like to try skydiving. Come on, that's about 50%. Crazy people. How many would like to try bungee jumping, which is skydiving on a rubber band? Pretty much same folks. How many like roller coasters? Almost everyone. Okay, what is it that we like? It's that adrenaline rush, that cheating death, that feeling of fear. Now think about it. Girl in our church years ago tried skydiving, and her parachute got twisted and she fell to her death at the age of 17. Saw a girl in California, I read about this. She wasn't stupid, she took an instructor with her, and when their parachute twisted and she was coming towards the ground, her friends heard her screaming and felt the ground shudder 100 yards from where she hit. Saw on television a man try that bungee jumping thing, and that bungee went into a noose around his neck. Seen those bungee things snap quite a bit. More than 50 people have been killed on roller coaster rides in recent years in the US. So isn't it strange? You want to put your most precious possession, your very life, on the line for your love of fear, but when it comes to giving someone a piece of paper telling them how they can live forever, you're paralyzed by fear. So what's happening? Well, the Bible speaks of something called the spirit of fear. And whenever you go to do the will of God from your heart, you're going to have to battle the spirit of fear. It won't happen you worship Jesus on a Sunday morning. You're not going to come into church and say, Lord, it's not going to happen. Because the enemy couldn't care less how much you draw near to God with your lips as long as your heart is far from him. But when you want to do the will of God from your heart, you're going to have to battle a spirit of fear every time. So how do I deal with it? Well, I think to myself, what is my worst case scenario in the supermarket line or the Kmart line? What's the worst thing that could happen to me if I give this guy a gospel tract? Here goes. So did you get one of those? No! That's probably it. Hyperventilation, sweaty palms, a sense of rejection. That's probably it. I've yet to hear of anyone being stoned to death in a Kmart for giving someone a gospel tract. You'd hear of someone being burned at the stake over in lingerie for giving someone a gospel tract. That's my worst case scenario. What's his? Damned in hell. Eternity. Lake of fire. So I got no choice. If I'm a Christian, I cannot but speak that which I've seen and heard. I'd like to close with this thought. It's ridiculous. You haven't got a clue what I'm thinking. So I'm going to speak it. If you were going to be given $1,000 every time you witness to someone, would you become more zealous in your evangelism? When I heard of that for the first time, I gave it some deep, serious thought for about half a second and thought, yeah, I reckon I would. If I was going to be given $1,000 for every person I witnessed to, would I be more zealous in my evangelism? Yeah. I mean, this is what happens. I fly a lot by plane. I've been on over 2,000 flights. I've had enough. But when I sit with someone on a plane, it's a good place to witness to someone because they're on the inside. They can't get out, strapped in. I wait till we've taken off 10,000 feet. If they get offended, I say, there's the door, leave. Go on. But this is what happens in a plane. Okay? Told you about it today. I say, got a guy on the inside of me. This is a wonderful opportunity. Thank you, Lord. The righteous are as bold as a lion. And they're here. What's that noise? It's my little heart. Stop it! And I've got this battle. What do I speak to him? What do I say? He might get offended. But if I knew I was going to get $1,000 for witnessing to him, I'd probably say, you, don't read what I want to speak to you. Now, we're going to spend eternity. Heaven or hell, quick. If you and I were going to be given $1,000 for every person we witness to, we'd become involved in 4 a.m. flashlight evangelism. Seriously, think about it. $1,000 every time we witness to someone? You know that alarm clock? You hate the noise of the alarm clock? All things would be different if $1,000 every time. Wait a minute. 4 o'clock in the morning? Well, I love that alarm. There you are. Now, where's my calculator? Where's my Bible? Where's the sinner? 8 o'clock? 11 sinners? 11 grand. Where's my next? Think of it. Could you deal with your fear of man problem for the love of money when you can't deal with it for the love of God? Let me repeat that for the men. Could you deal with your fear of man problem for the love of money when you can't deal with it for the love of God? I'd just like to leave you with that thought and then do what I just love doing at these sort of conferences, is share these with a few of you. Whoa, look at that. Take that. This is what Mr. Obama's doing. The government's doing. I'm talking. Hang on, I've got to spread these about a little. I love it. So, just as we close, let me tell you what's on our table very briefly. Because of the economy, we've taken this book down, The Way of the Master, to $10. Has a free Hell's Best Kept Secret tape, which is our most important teaching. If you haven't listened to this tape, please listen to it. If you can't afford the book, then you can listen to it on livingwaters.com, free of charge. And with the book, which is $10, you get $100 trillion bills free, and you also win a free trip to Hawaii for two at your own expense. Hey, thank you for listening. God bless you guys.